Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Jerry Martin Flickinger to the broadcast. Jerry is the Chief Information Officer of Adobe Systems, a multinational software company in the midst of a transformation to the cloud, a topic Jerry and I discuss in some depth in this interview. Among other responsibilities, Jerry provides strategic direction and management for the global IT infrastructure at Adobe, including hosted services. Prior to joining Adobe, Jerry served as the Chief Information Officer of VeriSign, a company that operates a diverse array of network infrastructure and offers a range of security services. Jerry's also served as the CIO of Network Associates and McAfee prior to its acquisition by Intel. In addition to her current role at Adobe, Jerry serves as a member of advisory committees for several venture firms, including Sierra Ventures. She's also involved in the Presidential Management Advisory Board, providing consultation on best practices in IT and building stronger product portfolio management for U.S. agencies. Jerry received a bachelor's degree in computer science from Washington State University. I recently caught up with Jerry in her office in San Jose, California, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 1, People, as we discussed the changing skill sets needed for the evolving leadership roles in IT. Principle 2, Infrastructure, as we discussed the implications of the move to become a cloud-centric business, both on IT and the organization more broadly. Principle 4, IT and Business Partnerships, as we discussed the methods she's used to engage customers, as well as a variety of other topics.
This is Peter High. Please consider reading my new book, Implementing World-Class IT Strategy, How IT Can Drive Organizational Innovation. The book covers topics such as the CIO as strategic facilitator, the development of IT missions, facilitating corporate and divisional strategy, the development of IT's own strategic plans, the development of enterprise architecture, reviewing, refreshing, and communicating strategy, and a variety of other topics. You can find it at Amazon.com, my publisher's website, Wiley.com, and at your better bookstores. Thank you very much.
Well, Jerry Martin Flickinger, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thank you for having me, Peter. I'm excited to be here.
Jerry, I thought I'd begin with something that's been such an exciting bit of news for Adobe as a company, generally speaking, and that is this significant transformation the organization has gone through to become more of a cloud-centric company. And I wonder if we could begin with just a description of that transformation, the sort of rationale behind it, and some of the steps the organization has taken towards becoming more cloud-centric.
It has actually been a really exciting time to be at Adobe. And as a background, most people think of Adobe as a software products company. The company has been around over 30 years. The legacy of Adobe is really around products like Photoshop and Acrobat, PDF, InDesign, products that people are used to hearing about and thinking about as desktop software. Several years ago, Adobe started moving in aggressively to the digital marketing area with their acquisition of Omniture. And starting from that point in time, they started down a journey of moving to more of a services company delivering SaaS-based online offerings as opposed to a product in a box, so to speak. So everything in the last 3 years has been focused on how do we move from traditional desktop software to a subscription service where people subscribed to various Adobe capabilities and then are on a renewing or an upgrading path to continue to leverage those services. And when you think about what that means to a company, it changes everything from how people build product to how they sell product. And as a CIO, it changes everything about your back office. If you're a products company, you think about things like material masters and SKUs and physical goods. When you're in the SaaS software cloud business, you think about entitlements, and you think about subscription pricing, and you think about product itself being highly configurable with add-ons that you can change and tweak up or tweak down every single month. So very, very different financial back office systems, very different way of doing business. In terms of how products are actually built, in the old days, we used to have product release cycles of maybe a year or 18 months. Today, we have product release cycles continuously. So every month, new products become available to our customers and are immediately consumed. In the old days, we built a CD, a Golden Master that was sent out to distribution, boxed up, and sold on stores. And it might take months, even quarters, before real customers would get that installed and start using it. Today, it happens in minutes. So lots of change for Adobe, and very exciting. Our customers are really passionately positive about this transformation because what it means for them is they get to use Adobe technology sooner than they used to be able to, and they're getting to see innovation in those products faster, which helps them build their businesses at a more rapid rate.
That's great. And it strikes me, Jerry, having gotten to know you a bit as someone who's been a CIO across multiple organizations, somebody who's been a consumer of cloud services for some time, that I'd be interested in the ways in which you, as a consumer of cloud products as a CIO, how that has allowed you to potentially influence your colleagues as the organization has contemplated this change.
I do think it is interesting that many IT departments know a lot about cloud operations and management because in many ways it's an extension of how IT has worked for many years. In terms of being a consumer of cloud services from other software companies, other services companies, I think one of the things a lot of CIOs struggle with right now is how to set up an engagement model, one that allows your business users to have a fair part of the ownership of those SaaS offerings. I'll just use a couple examples that are commonplace. Salesforce.com, as an example, is often a product that's brought in by the sales management or a sales team. And the sales team needs to continue to use that product as if it's their own. But an IT organization at scale needs to care about Salesforce.com from a compliance perspective, from a data integrity perspective, from a security perspective. So it really can't be the wild, wild west where sales can do their own thing with SFDC. What we've established is a series of guardrails that allow our businesses to take on what we call entrust projects, where they get to be front and center in the configuration and the ownership of that technology, but they have to play within five core guardrails. And these guardrails are areas where IT will remain in an ownership role, and it requires IT sign-off to allow the solution to go forward. So examples of those I've mentioned earlier, things like security, things like data integration, making sure that a SaaS provider or a cloud offering has adequate data interchange capability. Architectural compliance, making sure that the company that we're doing business with actually has an architecture that's modern and world-class and will actually evolve with our business. So we found a different way of thinking about IT engagement, both in terms of business trust as well as how we interface with those outside SaaS providers to ensure they know how IT fits in and what guardrails they're held accountable to.
Well, Jerry, it also strikes me as a chief information officer within a company that serves, among other constituents, chief information officers in your client organization, that you have an opportunity to engage your company's customer set with a position of empathy as a fellow CIO, not only as a representative of the company who is either already doing business with them or that the CIO is contemplating doing business with, but just as a chief information officer who is going through perhaps the same kinds of trials and tribulations or pursuing the same kinds of opportunities that they are. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the way in which you engage Adobe's customer set, your fellow CIOs and other IT executives.
Well, I actually really enjoy this part of my job. It's fun being a CIO in high tech because you do get very directly engaged with your customers because we live high tech. That's our job. There's really three different ways that I engage with our customers, and I do that on a weekly and daily basis, frankly. The first is I see myself as an internal advocate for the CIO community at large, our customer community. And part of that is because I live the enterprise experience. So when I talk to my CIO customer peers and they talk to me about the needs for identity management integration across SaaS properties, cloud properties, and internal systems, I can bring that message back to our engineering departments inside Adobe and help put that in terms that they can understand. For example, it's important that the Adobe services identities can integrate with a corporation's LDAP implementation for identity. And so I can become an advocate for the needs and the priorities that our customers are telling us about. You know, second aspect of how I engage with our customers is I myself am a customer of our products. which is also a lot of fun when you're in a tech company, I get the chance to be customer zero. And customer zero means I get to be a customer before anybody else does. So before we go GA with any product that's targeting an enterprise, we roll it out ourselves. And when I say we roll it out, it can be a pretty significant event. In the case of our AEM product, for example, we roll it out to our worldwide websites, which are large. They get about 75 million hits a week. Pretty impressive volumes, and something most companies wouldn't take as a risk on a pre-GA product. So that's a really important aspect, is to be customer zero and really live that experience so that before a real customer touches it, we've ensured that it's going to be the quality and the capability that's expected. And then last but not least, I get the opportunity to interact with peer customers through all of the different CIO forums and groups and events. And that's a really fun way where we all get to share our own set of best practices or our own challenges. And that learning is something that I can both bring back to Adobe, but also just improve my own toolkit of capabilities to make us stronger and better. So I think there's lots of fun ways that I get to engage with our customers, and I think it's a really positive part of my job. And I'd encourage every CIO to find a really good way to engage with their customers.
You know, it's interesting, as I hear you talk about the extent to which you are engaging customers, you and your team are testing and using the company's products, as well as just the company's and IT's adoption of the cloud technologies, it strikes me that there must be some changes in terms of the kinds of roles that you need today versus past experiences, perhaps as a CIO. And I'm curious, from a personnel perspective or from even a leadership team perspective, are there different kinds of skills that you are looking for than you would have in maybe your first CIO role?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think it's massive changes across all the dimensions of people, process, and technology, and I think those have shown up in a number of ways. So let me kind of parse those apart. I think one thing that's very different about current modern IT is that so much of what a good IT professional has to do is be able to integrate people, integrate systems, integrate data, and it's almost the concept of the old broker consultant role. You know, a really successful IT professional today, it isn't about a specific piece of technology they know very well. It's how they can bring things together. So, for example, in our world of digital marketing, what we're seeing with our own products and with our customers is this really tight allegiance between, say, marketing professionals and IT professionals to really unleash the power of digital marketing, you know, analytics, personalization, content management. So collaboration, integration, working in a more collaborative style is critical. So we have a different kind of leader in IT today than we would have had 15 years ago. At a technology level, the type of things people are doing, even in the technology, is quite different. 15 years ago, we were all enamored with ERP and the idea that you buy this big mammoth core system and your technologists were physically working on configurations and very small extensions to those systems. Today, what our teams focus on technically, the most critical work we're doing is really at the services enablement layer, building things like web services that can be used to integrate together services, products, applications, or data between different places, whether that's running in our internal enterprise or whether it's in a cloud. So, for example, today, if a product engineer for Adobe, like let's just say Photoshop, wants to do something like embed e-commerce into a desktop Photoshop product, they can actually call a web service to do that commerce transaction. And it's that web service that IT builds and delivers now. Very different concept from 15 years ago, where what IT did was delivered an ERP product catalog. So this idea of web services as the technology container that IT professionals all rally around and that's what they build is a very, very big transition. So the skill sets are very different. We see people that are much more integration oriented, much less hardcore technologists in a specific product.
Is it fair also to say, Jerry, that the average person has to be a bit more business savvy, a bit more strategic? I'm hearing you talk also about a broader migration away from
the deep technical skills, which were the understandably the bailiwick and the area of expertise and the point of differentiation from the rest of the organization, in some cases to the detriment of the leader and his or her team, now to being more woven into the fabric of what the company does. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely. And I think we've been seeing that trend for a number of years. You know, I think the expectation of the level of sophistication of IT leaders today is definitely increased in the area of business acumen, the ability to bring together different constituencies in a very positive, collaborative, but well-informed business model. I think that's very true.
I'm also interested in, obviously, you work in the Bay Area, Silicon Valley, sort of the heart of innovation from a technology perspective for the world. And as a result, you have access that a lot of your fellow CIOs don't necessarily have, at least as readily, by virtue of proximity to so much innovation that's happening, a lot of which perhaps you can find more easily and sort of translate some of the technology changes back into your organization. I know you've also been on advisory boards to venture capital firms like Sierra Ventures, for instance. And I want to ask you a couple questions related to that. One, the benefits that you have gotten from your affiliation to the VC community and your engagement of startups, but actually also I'd be interested, as somebody who's been a CIO in other places as well, if you found yourself sometime in the future not working in the Bay Area, or if you were speaking with a peer of yours who works in the Midwest, let's say, or in another country for that matter, ways in which you would advise them to gain some of the same kinds of insights that you can by virtue of the network that you have built, but also the proximity to where all this innovation is happening.
Yes. So there's a couple questions there. Let me piece them apart a little bit. First, let me talk a little bit about the VC community. And you've mentioned Sierra Ventures, and there's a few other venture firms that I sit on advisory boards for. What's very cool about that is I have not met a venture capital firm yet that doesn't want to have some CIOs look at companies they have in their portfolio. They really want to hear from real practitioners what resonates and what doesn't. They even want to hear things like, hey, that person can really tell their story about their product and it works. So CIOs first need to know that their point of view and their opinion, there's people out there looking for it and they want to hear it. So my first suggestion is, just because you don't live right in the middle of the Silicon Valley doesn't mean you can't raise your hand and find out about these advisory boards and become active in them. Most of the boards that I'm on have at least half of the participants from out of the area. So people make this part of their objective as a CIO to become involved so that they can hear what's going on and also be part of that fabric, because it does energize you. So I think the boards are actually a really good use of CIOs' time, no matter where you sit in the world. But if that's not feasible for you for one reason or another, or you haven't found the right connection to make that happen, one of the things I have established a few years ago that works really well is something I call Innovation Day at Adobe. We do it once a year, and once a year I invite several venture firms to send a set of startups from their portfolio to present to Adobe employees. And it's an open forum, so we get technologists in there with all sorts of experience. It's great for our Adobe employees because they get a chance to hear from some of these small startups that they may just be interested in. It gives them some inspiration about thinking outside of the box. And it gives these small venture portfolio companies who maybe, you know, two or three people, they're not all of them aren't very big, gives them a chance to present their ideas and their products to a very seasoned, experienced team. That sounds like such a small tactical activity, but it has turned into this galvanizing point of the year when the IT folks, for example, know that they can get in a room and spend the whole day listening to these one-hour pitches, and they get to weigh in on what they found was interesting, and it really energizes these startups because they get to hear from real people who, again, are practitioners in the domains that they're trying to sell into. Now, if you can't physically make that happen, almost every company I know of has a really rich video conferencing capability, and any of these venture firms would be happy to put their portfolio companies on a video conference presentation to get that energy. But I think the energy has to come from the CIO bringing that voice together with their own team. It's not just about the CIO getting energized.
What great ideas, and what an interesting symbiotic relationship, sort of a win-win-win between the VC, their portfolio company, and a company like Adobe in this case, putting together this Innovation Day. I really love that idea. Well, I'd be interested also, Jerry, just as a kind of a closing question, especially since you have such exposure to so many interesting, innovative companies, in addition to the very interesting and innovative work that you and your team does. What sort of other trends or what other technologies are particularly exciting to you as you sort of contemplate the upcoming year, two or three? What other areas beyond some of the trends we've already covered particularly excite you?
Yeah. Well, one of the trends we've already covered, but I think I'd still like to underscore, is integration. I think integration and the opportunity for emerging companies to show up to become integration hubs for some of these SaaS and cloud services is really an interesting and rich area right now. Identity management, which I mentioned earlier, is one of those areas where I think there's a lot of opportunity for small companies that are highly innovative to think about doing things like unified identity, both at a consumer level as well as larger entities, enterprises, or governments. That's a really interesting area because at the moment, it's not about any particular function point not having enough innovation. It's about how you start bringing this stuff together in a way that doesn't lose the magic of each individual solution, but doesn't overwhelm people with too many different user experiences. So I think that would be my second area, is user experience evolution. And that one is going to be a unification that I think we're just going to see as the industry settles out a little bit more over the next 3 years. You know, if you think about how we've moved from the world of a web-based browser with a very narrow form factor to one where we're now on devices with form factors that are changing almost on a weekly basis, and then you add the app model to that paradigm, you know, which was a complete disruptor a few years ago. At some point here, we're going to have to see some unification again of user experience so we don't end up in a place where everything looks different to the point where it's hard to operate. So I think that'll be another area we'll see some innovation and some winners and losers over the next 3 years.
Great thoughts all around. Well, Jerry Martin Flickinger, thank you so much for taking this time to speak with me on the Forum on World Class IT. I think a really great conversation and a whole host of wonderful insights. No doubt our listeners are going to be able to glean and employ in their own environment. So thank you so much for sharing such rich insights with us all.
Thank you, Peter.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to Meta Strategies' five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.